21st Century Radio is sponsored by Hieronymus & Company. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for award-winning 21st Century Radio. Here's your host, Dr. Bob Hieronymus. My shoes are worn out, walking down this same highway. I don't see nothing new, but I feel a lot of change. And I get the strangest feeling as I'm heading for the light.
Well, that's where we're all headed, towards the light. And welcome back to 21st Century Radio. I'm Dr. Bob Hieronymus. Our executive producer and research assistant, Laura Kortner. Our engineer is Noah Dankner. Later this hour, we will hear from Karen Tate about her new book, Goddess Calling, Inspirational Messages and Meditations of Sacred Feminine Liberation Theology. But first, we are going to check in with my old pal, Sir Richard Taylor of the Weta Workshops in New Zealand, who is partially responsible for bringing to life a magical world where goddesses were commonplace. Some might consider the fantasy work of J.R.R. Tolkien as heavily entrenched in patriarchy, and there is some obvious connection there. Considering the lack of gender balance just in the lead roles throughout his books, but the reverence for the natural world and the working with it and tapping its magical sources, plus the elven queens and the warrior horse women, all work to save Tolkien from being labeled a typically misogynistic Oxford don. I happen to be one of those Tolkien fans who thoroughly enjoys the film adaptations of Peter Jackson and Company, even to the extent of changing the storylines and adding new characters. I'm not so much of a purist that I am offended at their successful attempts to add strong female lead characters for the more discerning modern audiences who have grown to expect such things. Now, this is one of the topics we will discuss with my friend Sir Richard Taylor, multiple Oscar winner, responsible for all the special effects for all the Tolkien movies since 2001. Richard and his Weta Workshop company created all the props, costumes, prosthetics, miniatures, and weaponry for the Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit film trilogies, as well as practically every other blockbuster film in the last 10 years. Listen to this. Weta Workshop also worked on Spider-Man, Superman, Iron Man, X-Men, The Chronicles of Narnia, King Kong, Avatar, and many, many more. Visit their website at wetaworkshop.com. That's W-E-T-A workshop.com. Well, thank you for joining us again on 21st Century Radio, Richard.
Oh, it's a great pleasure, Bob. We always enjoy our catch-ups, and they happen every few years, so it's nice to talk to you again.
Well, I know that other interviewers probably ask you some of the same questions over and over again, so I'm going to do my best to ask you some new ones tonight. Is that okay?
Yeah, great, great. And I just remind you that since we last talked, you kindly sent me that amazing split-screen combi camper that now resides in pride of place in our display cabinet at home.
You're enjoying it, I take it.
Amazing. Well, I peel the layers of the Bob Hieronymus onion back and continue to discover more color.
Well, I'm telling you, we're excited about that little bus because what has just happened down in Brazil is the last combis are now being, they're not making them anymore.
And I appreciate it. My wife has got a beautiful 1962 split screen, and she's very thankful that she now, well, she's always been thankful she owns it, but she's super pleased now that that obviously there may not be any more in our world, which is a great loss.
That is a great loss, because we always thought they were buses. that could carry everything in the world. And, you know, I know nothing about cars, but I learned how to put an engine in one after I put about the fifth or sixth engine in it, because they really couldn't carry. 39 horsepower just wasn't enough to do much. No. But it looked good, though, didn't it?
No, they still look beautiful. They still look one of the finest pieces of roadway architecture ever, eh?
Indeed. Well, at any time during the production of these now six Tolkien movies under Peter Jackson, has anyone reported seeing or feeling the presence of Professor Tolkien, say, visiting on the set? Anyone smell his pipe tobacco or feel him looking over their shoulders? Anything like that ever happen?
Well, if not physically, maybe metaphorically. No, I've never heard anyone mention that. But, of course, through his writing, he's always there on our shoulder. We utilize the writings of the book as of the books as a guide and an inspiration. And so he and his learned and authoritative mind for the world of Middle-earth is never far from our touch. And so he certainly has a presence. We've been very blessed to work alongside someone that obviously passed away a long time ago, but still has such a strong presence in our lives.
Well, thank heavens you made sure he didn't disappear. We were afraid back in 1991 that things were just not going to continue in that direction. That's why we did a whole series of shows to try to convince some of the publishers of his work not to, you know, not to run away. But little did we know that everybody else was just as excited as we were. So that really worked out.
I know, and you know, one of the greatest offshoots of the movies, obviously the movies in their own right have been entertaining and people have loved them, but it's introduced people to the books that otherwise may not have taken the time to discover Tolkien's world. And I don't know what the statistic is on the uptake of the books since the films came out, but it must be very jollying to everyone that has grown up loving that literature to see so many new people discover it and cherish it so warmly.
You're right. That's a real thrill because we know that it won't disappear. I'm always afraid of that kind of good stuff. Sometimes in this country just goes away somehow like that. Did you ever experience any uncanny coincidences during the film or post-production when things went wrong or suddenly fixed themselves as if you had maybe guardian angel?
Well, I talk of film magic. It's a slightly goofy and silly term at some level, but it does actually happen. Like, no rational business person looking at the model of filmmaking would consider it a worthy endeavor. But somehow, for some reason, the passion of the people and the drive and enthusiasm of the group generates just enough magic to make it all work out in the end. And there has been an uncanny number of cases across the length of this these projects where something that should have got a lot more curly than it actually did seemed to come right because of just the goodwill of the project and the love that everyone had for the subject and the ability to just soldier on and get it done.
Yeah, soldiering on and getting it done. Yes, you can feel and see that. Now, I believe the spirit of J.R.R. Tolkien would have enjoyed these films, and I wouldn't be surprised if he gave you his blessing, especially when some little changes are made that I absolutely adore. For example, whose idea was it to insist on adding a strong female character in the film versions?
Well, undoubtedly, Peter, Fran, and Phil. I love that addition too. I realize that for some people that are very purist about the writing, it would have been a little bit of a jolt. But I hope that people can see how important it is to a story such as this that 50% of the world is well represented in the form of a strong female character. I absolutely loved the role that Evangeline Lilly played. I thought the Tauriel character was a huge triumph, and the way Peter directed that role, playing between power and strength and the ethereal and the mystical, was so beautifully handled. And I was mesmerized by the role, as equally probably as I have been with Cate Blanchett's role in the past.
Oh, yes, yes. Well, it seemed to me that Peter obviously would be a principal advocate among your creative team and anyone that he may be related to in this particular life. We are moving in the time of our planet where an important balance between male and female is absolutely necessary if we're going to be able to continue, because it seems as if the women really are, especially in this country, far more serious and conscious about the problems of our planet and about the problems that people have from day to day and working them out And that's one of the things I think really a gender balance was really more necessary than all the old Oxford Don gave us in those particular mythologies. Would you agree with that?
I agree. We definitely are in a time of sea change where a more appropriate balance will hopefully bring some level of rational harmony. You know, the effects industry invariably has, by its very nature, an imbalance between men and women in the workforce of workshops such as ours because of the, you know, simple fact that boys grow up making models in their bedrooms and maybe naturally migrate towards an industry such as we have. But we've always tried to retain a 50-50 balance between men and women on the workshop floor so that we get that equal and rounded balance. Mm-hmm. We have a great fortune as a country that about two decades ago, New Zealand had a campaign called Girls Can Do Anything. It was a bumper sticker campaign. It was posters in schools. And so you're as likely to find a young woman using a table saw in the workshop as you are a young man, because so empowered are the the sexes equally to achieve at any task. And that's actually a very, very powerful and valuable thing for someone like me who's an employer, because you have equal and open access to the full population of talent. Regardless of whether they're male or female.
Well, I think that element within the film helps create a world where women are revered and empowered as much as men. And I think that that's a world worth saving. I'm certain that most other artists feel the same way, that balance, that key here. But were you in charge of all the makeup, costumes, special effects, miniatures, and sets like you were in all the other movies?
We did everything that we did on the previous films. We didn't do any miniatures, very sadly. Miniatures are becoming a rarer commodity in the world. We're very, very fortunate that we've managed to get the television series remake of the Thunderbirds off the ground, because we're building that all with miniatures, specifically designed to be built with miniatures so that we get to build miniatures again. But for feature filmmaking, miniatures are getting very, very rare, primarily... the digital evolution of effects work is creating environments that allows the camera to fly far more freely through it than can be achieved on a miniature. Also, many more films are becoming 3D, which is significantly more challenging to achieve on a miniature. So, unfortunately, a lot of things are now pulling away that craft, which is a huge loss, in my view, to the industry and a huge loss for the audience, because miniatures have had a very beautiful place in the world.
Well, I don't get excited about many movies like I do about these Hobbit and Lord of the Rings movies, but I don't want to give the impression that Weta Workshop is a one franchise outfit. You guys have been involved, it seems, in every blockbuster in the last decade and a half. For example, the current Iron Man, Wolverine, and Superman, to name just a few ones. And to name a few of the older ones, such as Avatar, King Kong, District 9, I, Robot, Rise of the Planet of the Apes, and the list goes on and on. So what's coming up next that excites you the most?
Well, we've just finished our work on Spider-Man, which was an absolute delight. We did the Green Goblin and a whole pile of the Oztec. We did Elysium, which of course has come out, Neil Blomkamp's latest film, and we're now working on his new film, which is amazing for us, because we so enjoy working with that director and his team. We're doing a huge film in India at the moment, and we've got a team over there, and they've been there for a year now, which is a massive prosthetics job with director Shankar. Last year we worked on 6 feature films, manufacturing, and we designed on 30 feature films, so it was a busy old year.
As well as
4 video games and a couple of TV shows. Probably mostly exciting right now is the endeavors we're making with our television production company, Pukeko, which I run with my colleagues across the corridor from where I'm sitting. And that's in an endeavor to create scripted drama television for the New Zealand screen industry, and we're about 6 months into the Thunderbirds, and you know, so I've got a team of people downstairs building amazing models of crazy environments, and we're preparing to start shooting that in about 2 weeks, and that'll be a long, hard haul for a year and about a year, but hopefully we'll create a show that will bring young boys and girls to love the Thunderbirds as we did as we grew up.
Yeah. Now, I know you and your family share the concerns that my wife and I do, expressing on 21st Century Radio for over 20, 30 years now, that the worldwide impact of climate change is gradually getting worse every year. But anything inspiring happening to shift this paradigm down in New Zealand and change our global energy patterns?
The New Zealand is, you know, prides itself in being always focused on you know, alternate energies, and our primary energy comes from the rivers that are harnessed throughout our country, and that has been the case for a very long time. Although we've seen a proliferation of wind turbine technology going up throughout the country, and even within a 100-kilometre radius of where I sit today, there are now mind-boggling wind farms that are capturing the wind that's ever-present in our country. Being a strip of land in the middle of a wild ocean, you're guaranteed to be able to harness that. I tell you, one of the best things I'm witnessing, though, in respect to this, as you know, Bob, I've been traveling to China for a long time now. I'm now in my 14th year of doing business in China, and I've watched with fascination as that country has grasped the challenge of going from an industrialized and obviously very dirty, in some cases very dirty, industry-based provinces to, as fast and as efficiently as they can, respecting the need to change to new energy-generating technologies. 2 years ago, I visited a city outside Shanghai where you can't build a house there unless it's 100% driven off its own solar panel technology. You know, people look at China and frown at the pollution in Beijing and other issues, but it's not for lack of trying. It's incredible how focused the intent is in China to try and turn the tables on this issue. And we can all be inspired by that, for sure.
I sure am inspired by it. Thank you for telling me that. I mean, I realized you were going there, but over 14 years, you can really understand over a long period of time, over that period of time, understand the kind of consciousness that's there and what they're trying to do, and get a better insight as to what is really happening rather than the kind of propaganda that we generally get this part of the world as to how bad they are.
Yeah, the changes in China are mind-boggling, and the openness of the government to the challenges that they face. I was involved in a very unique discussion with a senior member of Chinese government who admitted that there was a you know, well over 100 million people still struggling in poverty in China. And someone asked, well, how are you going to feed them? And he answered, well, we won't, which created a sort of an aghast expression at the table. He said, look, if you feed them on Monday, they want to be fed on Tuesday, and by Wednesday you've run out of food. Someone said, well, what on earth are you going to do as a government? He said, it's quite simple. We're going to get the internet to every single one of them. And, of course, the intent in that is the only way to feed 100 million people is to educate them into how to feed themselves. The only way to do that is to get the internet to every single one of them, and that's exactly what they're doing.
Good point.
And it's forward thinking at a monumental scale that countries such as our own, you know, can't begin to to comprehend. From a, you know, we have a population of 4 million people, a small city in a small province of China.
My heavens! Well, it's obvious after what we've talked about, you have an amazing creative output to be proud of. More than amazing. It's unbelievable. And every time I talk to you, you also have an incredibly positive and encouraging message. How do you do it? What advice can you give to budding artists? Because it's a mythological kind of struggle that we all go through.
And you are right. For people in the audience that aren't trying to make a career from the arts, they may scratch their head at that one and go, "Oh, come on, Bob. You know, that sounds like you're waxing it a little bit." But it is trying to keep a creative company alive, making enough profit each year so that you can go back into the fray the next year is certainly challenging. You know, one of the things we all need to do is go out and purchase a pair of rose-coloured spectacles. I very gladly was gifted a pair at birth, and I wear them every day of my life because if you can't look at the challenges, the problems as challenges and challenges as rewarding conquests, it's going to beat you down. You know, I can arrive every morning, 25 years into my career, still with this unabashed enthusiasm for what we do. We now we'll publish our 10th and 11th book this year, written by staff within the workshop. None of them have ever written a book before, but why do you need a book writer to write a book? Why can't someone that has a knowledge write a book? Mm-hmm. We're still making our collectibles. We're still doing public artworks. We are getting to develop television, working in the film industry. It's about making sure that there isn't a minute left unfulfilled and squeezing everything you possibly can out of the life that's given you. So I couldn't bear the thought of ending on my deathbed and reflecting on the fact that I mucked around for a while and wasted away some of my time given. So that's sort of the driver for me.
Well, I don't know how in the world you could even fit the time in to muck around. Well, hobbits may be more real than most people think, and I'm going to send you a book on that, okay?
Yeah, on the little people
used to
exist, you know, with our Neanderthal forefathers.
You seem to know there indeed were, and that they were really quite brilliant and very spiritual little beings. Well, thank you again for joining us on 21st Century Radio, and we'll be talking to you again. Richard.
Okay, all the best, Bob, and thank you to all your listeners for hearing me waffle again, and cheers to you all from all your friends here in Wellington, New Zealand.
Thank you very much, sir.
Bye-bye, then.
And we just learned from Richard Taylor that our Woodstock bus model is going to be seen in a future show of the Thunderbirds. We're looking forward to that one. Now, that was Richard Taylor, and you should check out his work at wetaworkshop.com. That's W-E-T-A workshop.com. Time for a break now, and when we return, we'll be joined by the Reverend Dr. Sharon Tate to talk about her new book, Goddess Calling, Inspirational Messages and Meditations of Sacred Feminine Liberation Theology.